Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Hello, my name is Stephen Lewis, and you're listening to the Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In a moment, Jessica Murray will be joining us to discuss America's birth chart. But before we get started, please join me in welcoming my co-hosts. Maureen, how are you tonight?
I love how you say my name. Say that again.
Maureen.
Yeah, I like that. I never really know. I'm doing okay. I'm looking forward to your show.
What do you do at PsychicAccess.com?
I do the dishes.
No, that's not true.
I'm a intuitive psychic consultant, empath. I utilize tarot. I do feel the tarot is a symbolic record of a human experience. So those are my pals, those cards. So, and I work, yeah, and I must do what I must do, my work. There you have it.
That's a powerful and apt way of putting it.
You're welcome.
Lady Brenda, greetings to you.
Greetings. Happy 4th.
Happy 4th of July. That's right. Thank you for reminding us. It's Independence Day today, isn't it?
It is. And it's interesting because Egypt had their Independence Day yesterday.
Perhaps we can learn a little
bit. I think it's really awesome.
I think we can all learn a little bit from the Egyptian desire for freedom and civil rights.
Exactly.
Well, they did.
Go ahead.
Lady Brenda, why don't you tell us what you do at PsychicAccess.com?
I'm a predictive psychic. I read the crystal ball and do the tarot and the playing cards. And I specialize in dates, times, and places, and work with all you lovely people at PsychicAccess.com.
Awesome. Very good. And Steve, how are you tonight?
Very well, thank you. Excited about the show. You know I'm a big fan of Jessica Murray.
Oh, yes, I do know that, and I'm excited as well. I can't think of a better way to celebrate America's birthday than to talk about the America's birth chart. So why don't you tell us about some of the things you do at Psychic Access?
Well, I'm a psychic medium and hermetic astrologer, and I give readings at Psychic Access along with you guys and have a lot of fun and enjoy helping people.
Oh, okay. Awesome. We got a lot of talented people over there at PsychicAccess.com, and it's great to work with you guys. Well, tonight we have Jessica Murray, astrologer, author, and cultural commentator, who's highly regarded for her comprehensive knowledge of astrological symbolism. You can visit her at www.mothersky.com, where you can find the innovative Skywatch service, which tracks the astrological weather, and you can pick up her book, Soulsick Nation, which we'll be discussing tonight, at the Crossroads, and her anthology called Transpersonal Astrology, which she contributed to. And interestingly enough, she'll also be doing a webinar on these very topics we're discussing tonight on the 11th and 13th and 14th of July in an online astrology webinar. So, with no further ado, I would like to welcome Miss Jessica Murray.
Hello. Is it Stephen?
Hi, yes it is. How are you, Jessica?
I'm very well. Nice to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We've got a lot on our table as we talk about our great nation's birth and its evolution.
Yeah, it's a very special day to be having this talk. I'm very pleased to be here.
Well, in your book, Soulsick Nation, uses a specific birth chart for America. Can you tell us a little bit about that chart, the Sibley chart?
The Sibley chart is a hotly contested topic. You know, astrologers always have their own little partisan views on which is the real beginning of this entity we're calling the USA. But there seems to be a consensus that the July 4th, 1776, it's one of the most popular charts for it. And so we pick that time and date in Philadelphia. And there's a whole bunch of controversy, too, about what time that day, you know, where was
right.
the moment that marked the first breath, as it were, of this new being. But I use
right.
the Sibley chart. It has a Sagittarius rising and so on. I have it in front of me, and I wonder if most of your viewers will probably be familiar with it.
Well, I would hope so. We announced that we'd be using the Sibley chart, and
oh, good.
It's mm-hmm. definitely a good idea to be looking along with it as we talk. It's really easy to download. You can Google Sibley chart and pick it up for free in a matter of seconds, and
mm-hmm.
it'll definitely help put this conversation into context. So if America is an entity, looking at the Sibley chart, looking at its rising sign, its moon, its sun, what sort of personality are we dealing with here?
Well, you know, we often use the concept of a personality as being symbolized by the ascendant. And so we have Sagittarius rising, and this is the cowboy, you know. I think its modern incarnation would probably be the NASCAR driver.
Ah.
So there's this, you know, we love this, and people all over the world have been in love with this personality, this cowboy-like personality. You have the, I guess, the 49ers, who struck
sure.
it out west for San Francisco, is one incarnation of it. And then, you know, there's Marlon Brando on his motorcycle, kind of the reckless and fast-living and independent, and there's John Wayne. And this is a hugely attractive symbol. I think that people all over the world know this as a Sagittarian country. You know, it's one of the reasons I believe in the Sibley chart. And then
right.
there's the Aquarius moon, which is in the third house in the chart I use. And it's also trine Gemini Mars. I don't know if this is getting too technical, but it puts together the third house, which is a house of the zodiac that is associated with thinking.
Ah,
and,
okay.
you know, Aquarius is associated with technology.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about the trine aspect?
Say it again.
Could you tell us, explain a little bit what a trine aspect
well,
is?
Well, it's a smooth aspect. It actually means 120 degrees of geometrical arc between the planets. So you get this idea that it's easy relatively easy for this entity to have the kind of thinking that is active, that's Mars, in communications and passing information around. So really, it's a shoo-in for the USA to manifest something like Silicon Valley.
Sure. Sure. When I see that Sagittarius rising, I think of the foreignness of Sagittarius, the exoticness, and I wonder if that could not be sort of the public face of America, sort of an astrological way of saying you're going to be a nation of immigrants.
That's a good point. I think that the aspect of the seventh house, which is where we have three planets, echoes that. The seventh house is also the house of foreignness. And there's
right.
really a threefold emphasis on Sagittarius here. If you think about the fact that Sagittarius' ruling planet, which is Jupiter, is right next to the sun in this chart, make it very strong. And then the fact that there's this whole party of planets in the seventh house, which is the house having to do with the foreign policy in a mundane chart. So, yeah, the seventh and eighth are both houses of relationship. And when you look at a country's chart, you see these planets in the seventh, you realize that foreign policy and the way we show up vis-a-vis others are very much a part of our karma.
Well, since Sagittarius is so heavily emphasized in the Sibley chart, we might want to look towards Jupiter to get more information about how this could possibly show up in our everyday reality as a nation. What's the Jupiter energy in America's chart like? Is it in good shape, healthy, unhealthy?
Yeah. You know, the ascendant, per se, is the view of the self. So in the country's chart, it's our national self-image. And this business of Jupiter, it kind of accentuates everything, making it bigger, so that Jupiter does govern size and increase and growth. And I think it's significant because this is a big, big country with big plans and big fantasies and big ambitions. And everybody wants to come here, as you say, from the rest of the world.
And America has some big people in it as well. Every time you turn around, you read a doctor's report, all the doctors lamenting about how obesity
people
is an epidemic.
They're tall here. They really are, and they're too big and they're too obese. So we, you know, when we look at the higher potential of this archetype, the Jupiter archetype, you can think that, and the Sagittarius rising, at best are moral symbols and ethically driven. And there's an openness and a tolerance to that archetype, too. But, you know, the trouble with ethical emphasis is that when it's wielded in an immature way, then we think we're always right.
Sure.
We don't base our approach on facts, which by contrast Gemini does. Gemini is about facts and statistics, but Sagittarius is about belief. And so what I think is happening with this chart is that you get Cancerian patriotism, which is a very emotional construct, really, and you filter it through the Sagittarius rising, and then it becomes kind of a my country right or wrong kind of thing.
Could this be what's responsible for America's impulses toward war? Would you say America is warlike?
Yeah, I think that we have the Mars in Cancer in the house, and so there is this idea that, you know, it's driven by righteousness, and it has this impulse to fight when there's an issue with somebody else, you know, coming together with somebody else. And the other part of it is that it's dualistic. So that, and I'm thinking of the Mars in Gemini in the seventh house. And I'm thinking of the bellicosity, as you say, and the dualism of thinking that it's either me or you.
Right.
You know, it's a zero-sum game. This is at its most crude. This is not how I think that these things could be expressed, ideally. But it is how that we can see they are being expressed.
Well, our Saturn in the 10th house and exalted in Libra, it should give us a better moral leg to stand on, but it doesn't, does it?
Well, I mean, it is, as you say, that it's the crowning planet of the chart. And it's in a beautiful placement as it is, you know. It is our sense, for better or worse, of being the dad of the world. And I think that the fact that we refer to our first politicians as fathers, you know, the founding fathers, is really kind of hilarious. We even capitalized the phrase in our textbooks, founding fathers. You know, they're really more like father gods.
Yeah.
And we carved them in stone on Mount Rushmore. And so this idea of being larger than life, like we've made them into literally monuments on a mountain, and we do that figuratively. So that's a lot to live up to. And the fact that it's so visible, you know, the literal symbol of those founding fathers being seen for miles around, and then presenting it to the rest of the world from our 10th house. But the problem is, it's so ambivalent. This good dad archetype is very ambivalently held. And
yes,
we see that astrologically as the square, the 90-degree angle between that Saturn in the Sibley chart and the Sun. That means that those two planets are a quarter of a circle away from each other.
They're making
and
a right
that,
angle.
You know, we would
each
call
other.
That psychologically a father complex.
I see, and for sure, the whole concept of paternity has undergone, you call it what you want, a challenge, a transformation. But the notion of fatherhood in America is under siege.
That's right. That's true. That, I mean, the Saturn Sun square always means some kind of conflict. But what I think you're talking about is that there's this discrepancy between the actual state of fathering in this country and this mythology around it. And you know the statistical reality, this may be what you mean, of the American family is that mothers now keep finances afloat in 40% of the households with children. But we hear about, you know, cultural conservatives seem to think that's weird or aberrant, not a real family.
It offends their idea of that exalted Saturn.
It's a beautifully exalted Saturn. And I, you know, they're on to something. I mean, the ideal state of the family in terms of archetypes with a father that leads, and Libra is a very beautifully a leadership sign. But what I think is the sickness that not just the USA has, but that any entity has just as individuals can have, comes from what I'm going to call a cognitive dissonance. I talk about this in more detail in the webinar we're doing next week, but the We the People conference. But where there's a disconnect between the country's official narrative and ordinary people's reality, it creates this malaise in the populace. You know, I don't see the USA as being fatally flawed. Like you say, that Saturn in the 10th is a beautiful potential, but we're a little bit ill here, and we need healing. And I think that to heal, you have to diagnose. You can't heal without first identifying what's wrong with the patient. So we have in this instance a country whose national myth is that families consist of a father, mother, and children, and that the father supports the family physically and is the active force in the outer world. And then the mother supposedly supports them emotionally and keeps the home fires burning. And I think that's what the conservative Christians mean when they say traditional, although it's only been traditional since the Cold War years. But now it's totally outmoded. And I read that only 12% of American families adhere to that model.
Yes, the America certainly, when I see that Saturn perched at the top of the chart, and I think the 10th house is so, it represents our reputation. And I immediately think of the criticism given by the isolationists who believe that we should mind our own business, as it were. They always say that, well, we can't be the police force of the world, you know. And is that the sort of astrological signature that would cause an...
Yes, but it's ambivalent, because, in fact, we are the police force of the world. And the Saturn in Libra imagines itself to be the benevolent father, the pater familias of the whole world. And because this is a deeply unconscious collective value, of course, we think that we're right from the sage. And this idea of Libra, which is the great Solomonic judge, but it's terribly ambivalent. That's the trouble, is that one part of the chart can feel like it's undermining the other part. And the reality, like since the recession hit, which is still going on, of course, despite the fact that Wall Street is doing better than ever, that just went to undermine the father as breadwinner ideal even more.
It's very interesting that you should bring up Wall Street, because in your book, Soul Sick Nation, you talk a little bit about the interaction between Jupiter and Saturn, in the sense that America's Jupiter doesn't know when to stop. It has this ridiculous sense of entitlement, it seems like, where we seem to think anything ought to just have an unlimited growth potential. That the law of diminished returns don't apply to us.
It's really a trip. I mean, there are archetypes in astrology which associate with those very concepts. For example, Jupiter governs expansion, and Saturn governs contraction. And these two planets are square each other in the U.S. chart. They're in conflict. And it's Jupiter, of the two, it's Jupiter that's in the catbird seat, because it's conjunct the Sun. So that's the one that we identify with. You know, we're heavily weighted towards what Jupiter's all about, which is growth. But it's always joined at the hip by decrease or receding, including economic recession.
Looking at this configuration of the sky, I'm thinking, wow, this is a classic picture of someone or something that's in love with bubble economics.
Yeah, it reminds us of that. And I was talking about these things before the great, I mean, we were looking at this astrologically in the chart even before the 2008 recession started getting going, because it's deeply embedded in the psyche, in the group psyche of the country, that you have this knee-jerk reaction by business interests against anything that could be vaguely construed to be a limitation to growth. This is, you know, this terrible suspicion of taxing corporations and of penalizing companies that pollute, or putting rules and regulations of any kind on Wall Street to keep them within the bounds of reality. It's a big blind spot, and it comes down to not understanding how expansion and contraction work together. Because as you say, it only makes sense that inflation and deflation are two sides of the same coin.
Absolutely.
But it's not computing in the deep psyche of the USA. And in my city where I live, you know, in San Francisco, it's just a joke. The housing market, for example, is imagined to have no ceiling at all. Life is just one big dot-com boom that never has to go bust. So
yes,
we're setting ourselves up for a fall here, that's for sure.
Yes, absolutely. Soulsick Nation certainly sounded the drum for reform, and we'll talk about towards that later towards the end of the show what the common person can do to be a better citizen and to help America be the best it can be. All of this stuff reminds me of the Andy Griffith Show, because it's such a perfect snapshot of all of these archetypes we're talking about. Andy is the benevolent Saturn father. Aunt
That's
B
right.
is a female Jupiter. And mm-hmm. the drunk Otis is an example of what will happen when Jupiter gets out of control. He's big. He's drunk.
That's right.
So that show is amazing how it provides a snapshot for America where it is right now. The only thing missing from that show, however, is the dark god, Pluto, the energy that you'll be discussing in your webinar, and also probably one of the most important astrological factors in the American Sibley chart, a source of a lot of what is negative with and what's wrong with America. Can you tell us a little bit about Pluto?
Yeah, and what's so fascinating about Pluto is that it's hidden in plain sight. It's the part of the psyche or the part of an individual. You know, our listeners can look at their own chart and think about where Pluto is, that we don't want to admit to. And you know how in mythology, Pluto was the god of secrets, and he was the only one with a helmet of invisibility. So we're talking about a kind of power that doesn't show itself.
Right.
But it looms in the background, and everybody acts as if it's not there, but it permeates everything going on. And in the U.S. chart, it's in the house of money. So we've got the most powerful element in the chart, and by the extension in the world, which is the 1%, or the Occupy movement gave it a name, or a number, actually, of the 1%. But it's invisible, this little tiny elite, because it's invisible in the sense that we never see these people's names in the headlines. We don't see the CEO of Chevron on TV. We see the celebrities, right? The bankers aren't on the cover of People magazine.
Right,
but
the Bernanke's.
This is Pluto. This is who's really pulling the strings.
Now,
I think it's interesting that Pluto, I mean, obviously, isn't it obvious? It governs plutocracy, and it's in the house of money in the USA chart. I mean, I always found it so obvious, I just couldn't make sense of why no one used that word, plutocracy, until now. Now they're using it.
It's amazing, because that Pluto, I think, is a responsible, it foments a lot of rebellion and sort of a subtle existential type of angst, and you've actually presaged and talked about various type of insurrections before they have happened, and could some of this have been encoded or hinted at by Pluto's placement in the American chart?
I just don't see how any astrologer would have been able to look at that Pluto in the second house of money and banks and not had the word plutocracy come on in their mind and start blinking red lights.
Yeah.
But here's what I'm so interested by. I think that the hidden things are much more interesting because they talk about the way our human psyche works and the way it's been with this disconnect between the country's reality and its self-image. If you had called it what it actually is, a plutocracy, it would have been seen as downright traitorous because Pluto governs the concept of taboo.
Right.
But it's really too obvious to ignore now because the economy and the government of the USA are both arranged to serve the multinationals, which constitute a tinier and tinier slice of the electorate. And
sure.
The demographics are right there for everybody to see. This is what I mean by hidden in plain sight. But, I think that those financial instruments that got the stockbrokers and by extension all the rest of us in so much trouble, when they tanked the world economy, the income swaps and all these really hard to understand esoteric phenomena that they just created, they were Plutonian in the second house symbols too, because they were created with the clear intention of hiding the risk. So the whole catastrophe of 2008 was hidden in plain sight in that way, too.
It's amazing.
Am I making sense?
Pluto, mythologically, is associated with rape and taking by force. He stole Persephone and stole away with her into the underworld. What does Pluto's placement in our chart have to say about criminality in the American economy?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I think that I might start psychologically by defining those kind of crimes as compulsive. And if we define compulsion as a desire that can't be controlled, a behavior that grows so extreme as to be unhealthy, then I think you can use the word compulsive for the USA's relationship to money, and by extension, the banking elite's relationship to the social, the goods of the commonwealth, which is like a rape of the public weal. I don't know if this is too involved, but in Soulsick Nation, I talk about where this comes from and on an energy level. There's an imbalance between the four elements in this chart. But I think, to be succinct about this, that the idea of a heinous crime comes from Pluto because it pushes everything to extremes. And what's really going on, if you look at it in terms of transformational astrology, is that it backs us up against the wall so that there's nowhere else to go but to transform.
Yes.
That's what happens when the god takes the heroine down into the underworld. That's a symbol for it kills something off in order to force a rebirth. And Pluto did that to Persephone.
One gets the idea that these sneaky and underhanded economic practices or whatever associated mm-hmm. with it, that is designed to purge the American economy in the long run, that it's a sicking up, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully in the long run we'll be stronger because of it. I also can't help but think, because Pluto is also associated with archetypal blackness, and mm-hmm. the second house is the house of movable wealth. Do you think that this could also be a signature for slavery, America's ignoble history with enslaving other human beings?
I did make that point in my first book, that I think this whole idea of ownership, actually, the ultimate crime in the ownership category, because that's really what the second house is about, is the concept of possession. So the quintessential possession crime is to imagine that we could possess another human being. And I see that as one of the aboriginal crimes of the USA. You might say that, we were born with this sin to wash away, to work off, if you see karma as being something one can burn off. And the second one was the genocide of the indigenous people.
The Indians, sure. Because our concept of ownership was wholly at odds with theirs, wasn't it? You talk about that in Soul Sick Nation as well. Yeah. You know, the Indians, they their ideas of ownership were more collective, whereas we need titles and deeds and all right. all that stuff.
Well, Pluto is about power over. That is, in its crude form, before it's gone into its rebirth phase, if it hasn't opened the door to transformation. This has to be qualified, because this isn't what Pluto has to be. But in its crude form, it's power over style power, not power shared.
Ah, very interesting.
In the house of territory, so what do we want to do but move in there and overtake Iraq and Iran and anybody else with his gold? The black gold, that is.
So, in this sense, our second house, Pluto, is sort of gets in the way of the nobler aims of our 10th house, Saturn.
I
believe in Soul Sick Nation,
so
you described it very
interestingly,
a good cop, bad cop type of phase.
That is so true.
I think that's exactly true.
And, you know, both of those houses, the 8th and the 2nd, where we see Pluto, are involved with businesses and banks. You know, the 8th is more specifically about corporations. And we're so, you know, and the Saturn is sort of the ideally the good father who has the good housekeeping seal of approval, like the president. This idea that we need them to be a good man. It's not enough that they be a politician. They have to be a good man. We have to approve of him as a father figure. That comes from the Saturn, and that's the good cop.
Right. There's only been one American president, President Buchanan, in fact, who was a bachelor for the duration of his life.
Is that right?
I was reading that the other night, researching the Civil War. So he was apparently America likes its presidents to be family guys and not the Seth MacFarlane guy either.
That's right. They can't be like Berlusconi. They have to be a good, clean father.
Well, I'm also, when I see Pluto in the second house, I can't help but think about more minuscule sources of power, such as the internet, digitized information, banking, for example, you know, that's consisting of just zeros and ones instead of actual gold coin. You know, the sublimization of finances and making it complicated is really, really, I think, one of the more powerful planetary energies in the chart.
Oh, yeah, it is to me, too. It's really interesting. But, you know, that digital business is very much the moon in the third house of information. And digitalization is Gemini. Actually, Gemini governs the literal digits. It governs the fingers. And it governs manual activity. But more to the point, the idea of Gemini is binary. So it governs binary code. And that trine you're talking about is, I think, why we have just blossomed with technology and become the world leader.
Absolutely. And seeing that the ruler of Gemini is Mercury, Mercury is involved in a relationship, an angular relationship with Pluto, that's going to bring up the whole concept of ownership of the airwaves, ownership of the internet, and that's probably
Soul Sick
Nation talks
about that.
That's
the next big fight. I think you can smell the blood already from that battle. Go ahead. What were you saying? I'm sorry.
I was just going to say it's going to be a big deal because they're locked in an opposition there.
Yeah, that's the only opposition in the chart, and it's the main thing that we need to keep our eye on when we're trying to trace Pluto or the underground power source in this country. And when you think historically, and it wasn't that long ago, when television, in the early days of television, people thought of radio and television as a public service, as an organ of the people. I mean, the airwaves were seen as public property. And this you can see also in the moon in the third house. Third is the airwaves. The moon in mundane astrology represents the people. But I mean, to imagine that we thought of the airwaves as to be as free as the actual air that we breathe, that it couldn't be bought and sold.
Right,
I think that's
right.
Just astounding how far we've gotten from that, you know. It's because of privatization.
Well, Jessica, this is really getting juicy. Before we get too involved in this, I'd like to go ahead and break for a minute. Everybody listening at home, please feel free to visit Jessica at mothersky.com. Check out the Skywatch service. Pick up her book, Soul Sick Nation. It is fascinating. At the Crossroads, also fascinating. And if this topic interests you, you will not want to miss the webinar. And I believe with that, we will take our commercial break here.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
Okay, welcome back. Tonight's guest is Jessica Murray, astrologer and cultural commentator. This topic tonight is America's birth chart, and we're very fortunate to have Jessica here, especially in light of all of the current events, the furor, the uproar surrounding Mr. Snowden and the whole concept of NSA spying and how far America can go to get the information it needs. What are your thoughts about that, Jessica?
Well, I'm very captivated by that. Snowden, and it's just recently relatively late that astrology got its hands on his birth chart. So there's been a lot of talk about, you know, whether he's for real, actually. His chart is so Neptunian, which is to say that it's an enigma. There's a lot of mystery in it, which suggests that we're, you know, we don't have the full story and we probably never will. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say Neptune can also be about illusion and masochism as well, self-martyring himself.
It can be about, you know, can be, as you say, actual benefic martyrdom. I mean, the kind of selflessness that you might see in a conscientious objector. And I mean, there is a whole camp who believes that he's doing just what he says he's doing and that it comes from that kind of altruism. But what it is clearly, even though we don't know for sure, what we do know is that it's born of the Uranus-Pluto square, these transits that are going on in the sky right now, and that it leads back like a bloodhound, you know, sniffing the trail. It leads right back to the aspect in the U.S. chart we were just talking about, because Pluto has to do with privacy. And so we've got the planet of hidden power opposed to Mercury, the planet of communication, in the eighth house, which is associated with spies and corporations. I mean, it's all there. So this is the astrological signature for corporations and governments banding together until they're essentially fused, which is our Pluto and Capricorn in the second house, the plutocratic economy, and opposing the free flow of information. So, you know, we are heading towards our Pluto return as a country. And this is a whole other topic. But suffice it to say that that opposition that we've been talking about is sort of being introduced by the Snowden affair. And he's, you know, I consider him an agent of the Cardinal Cross, the transits that we're going through right now.
He could be a walking version of Mercury himself.
That's right.
An embodiment, emblematic of the archetype. Yes.
So you look at his chart and you're not really seeing the chart of just a person anymore. It's the chart of an archetype. He's become mythic. And for many of us, he's a Promethean figure, which is, you know, the guy who broke ranks from his brothers and sisters in the pantheon of gods and came down and gave advanced technology to humans, which at the time was fire, and was punished for it.
How dare he steal from the gods?
Say it again?
How dare he steal from Mount Olympus?
How dare he steal from the gods, and that he was the maverick who broke rank is so close to the fact of him being a spy who worked in the inner sanctum.
But there's something cunning about Mercury.
To go public. Go ahead.
There's something cunning about Mercury, isn't there? Something impish about him. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Because of his youth. And he stole his brother
That's
Apollo's
right.
sheep or cattle.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know,
That's right.
Mercury
so
in the Hindu
Uranus.
Religion, I think, corresponds to Lord Krishna, the butter stealer.
Did he steal butter? Oh, that's a good one.
Stole butter. In Christianity, Jesus is associated with the Mercury function, and here we see it as the two thieves who flank him. So this double-bodied, childish mischief is, I think, emblematic of Mr. Snowden.
That's an interesting point, because in astrology, Uranus is the divine trickster. He's not just playing around, but, you know, he opens himself up to tremendous privation and punishment by
Well,
doing
here
this.
We have Uranus opposed to the ascendant in the Sibley chart, don't we?
In the Sibley chart, opposed to the ascendant? No, it's really conjunct the descendant. That's right. That makes it opposed to the ascendant.
So how would that translate into an American reality?
I'm mostly thinking of Uranus in its position currently, which is square to Pluto, which is the NSA revelations that have exposed the control that's being exercised by these agencies. And here's this little trickster, the Uranian Snowden, who comes along. It's very interesting. What's going on is so seismic. I think people's understanding of what the government is, even what a government is as a concept, is in chaos. Because
yes.
Everything about the government, even the spying, has been privatized. We don't even have the good old evil CIA anymore. We've got organizations like Snowden worked for, which are these private corporations, so you can even pay the spies less.
I think America might have to add separation of corporation and state into its arsenal of political innovations, a la separation of church and state. They should probably be bedfellows.
Yeah. Right, because they have become fused, like they did with the mercenaries in Iraq. So the government now are contracting out their spying and contracting out their soldiers and joining forces with private companies like Blackwater and like Facebook, whose whole trip is data mining, from the beginning. But most people didn't seem to care about that. They didn't seem to care when Facebook did what Snowden is saying the NSA did. I think there seemed to be a different quality in people's minds when they find out that their government did this too.
Well,
but these are all agencies to whom we've ceded our power.
I think maybe going back to the compulsive Plutonian spending, where Americans feel they're not really alive unless they're buying something, the idea might be that we don't want to criticize the corporocracy or what you might want to call it, because then we won't be able to buy our trinkets.
It's really a trip. I think it really is very irrational, the relationship with spending and with debt. Debt is this is governed by the eighth house, and it's opposite the second house of spending. And we also have this tremendously ambivalent national issue going on with debt. Because on the one hand, we despise it. There's this Puritan strain, in America's psyche that considers it weak and shameful to be financially dependent. But, of course, our whole economic system now is set up to necessitate debt.
Yep.
If the middle class wants to start a business or buy a house, they have to get a loan. So it's become kind of a rite of passage.
The idea of John Wayne getting his house foreclosed on is ludicrous, isn't it?
He can't just build a log cabin anymore. He has to get a debt from a predatory lender.
And yet we have a system where if there is no debt, it collapses, supposedly.
Right.
We have to create debt in order to keep this construct aloft.
And I think that, exactly that, is what the sickness is.
Yes.
Because were Americans to really digest what you just said, it would be a terribly painful thing to realize. And it would totally upend the American dream, so-called.
Well,
and this being a cancer nation, that, you know, it's a very emotional sign. And that idea of house buying, cancer-governed real estate. So this American dream is all tied up with, I guess the subtext of it really is, I'm entitled to buy a house. That's what my citizenship entitles me to.
That's a ludicrous notion, but that's what a lot of people think. There's a huge sense of entitlement.
I think that's the subtext, yeah.
You can see it at work in infomercials.
And so now, as you're saying, this quintessentially American purchase of a house is something that ordinary Americans are less and less able to afford. So the dream becomes just a fantasy. I think that's what's making us so ill.
Well, that brings us to the therapeutic portion of the program. Everything's been sort of warning us. What sort of work can we do as individuals and as a collective? What has to be done? The Pluto work you mentioned and the Saturn work.
I think that's a very good way to put it. And I do say that you have to have a diagnosis before you have healing. So I don't think we can skip this step of, you know, noticing that the populace is very confused and dissatisfied and insecure. And I think that we have to dig underneath the surface to find out why that is. We have to look at the system itself. So we have the fact that, you know, the Pluto stuff, all the cognitive dissonance we're talking about, is the cause of people being very destabilized. And it comes down to the fact that the definition in their heads of living a normal, stable American life has become too estranged from the reality. So first thing we have to do is to ask ourselves, to what extent have we bought into these, you know, these American dream pictures, which really don't hold water anymore?
Right.
You know, and instead move into a confrontation with the reality, which is that the problem is systemic, that the system is jerry-rigged. It's not just about them personally, you know. This is the trouble, I think, that keeps people from seeing this. And it may be that I don't fall into this particular trap, although goddess knows I have my own, is because I was born without the patriotism gene, and I don't have a whole lot of water. So when I look at water and the sign Cancer from the outside, I see it as a very subjective sign. I think it's the most likely of any in the zodiac to take things personally. And so what I'm saying is that I think most Americans still irrationally feel that their lack of solvency is a personal failure. You know, that you know, they're being evicted or that their house is underwater. But as we're saying, the deck is stacked. And I think the first step to heal is realizing that. That, you know, otherwise, what's going to happen with the financial facts? The only people who can buy real estate are the young tech barons in Silicon Valley, or maybe Arab sheiks and Hong Kong billionaires. But it's not
thought.
The America that they learned about in their textbooks. And until this, you know, this disconnect is made, brought to consciousness, we can't heal that. We're not going to get over this.
Yes. With our second house cusp in Capricorn, you know, Capricorn has its moments. You know, it can be kind of ruthless and ambitious. It'll step on people who are weaker than itself to get ahead. You know, that's a very, I think, Capricornian type of situation. And to have Pluto in Capricorn, you know, I think in order to manifest that Pluto energy in a more positive way, I need to look at my own spending compulsions.
Right. That's right. We look at our own, the ways that we are participating in the consumerism that is kind of a national religion at this point. And it takes a boldness to withdraw from something that's so part of the warp and woof of the national psyche. It's everywhere. It's in the ads. It's in the commercials. It's in the billboards when you're driving down the highway. It's in all the popular entertainment. It's in the movies to buy, like you said, to spend. And if we could dare to do that, and to do that, what would we need to dare like that? We'd need probably the boldest placement that I can think of in astrology is Uranus and Aries. And that's exactly what we've got going on now in the sky.
Yes.
In other words, we have exactly the right kind of courage-building transits to make us break away like we're talking about.
Yes, Aries is a cardinal energy. It's like an atomic explosion. It gets things started. It's
right.
The ignition.
So the atomic part is Pluto, literally, in the sense that Pluto governs, you know, the atom bomb.
Plutonium.
And the idea that the only way to change for deep structure change is to take something down to its smallest building blocks, the atoms, in order to purge it and start all over again. And I think that's what's going to have to happen here to our second house. People are going to have to understand what the capitalist economy is about, you know, by daring to look it in the eye.
Well, coming up here in a few years, we're going to have the Pluto return, which is essentially almost an eclipse, a conjunction of natal Pluto with the transiting Pluto. It's a big deal.
Yeah. It's a big deal. It only happens once in 2.5 centuries for Pluto to come back to where it started. So we've never had one yet. This is our first one.
Oh, wow.
As a young country, we're not old enough to have already had one. So I look at things like indie capitalism. I don't know much about it, but just the concept of crowdsourcing and Kickstarter, you know.
Right.
The tech world has come up with some extremely exciting ideas which completely eviscerate old school capitalism. You know, we would expect that when we consider that advanced technology is governed by Uranus. In other words, the whole cyber life, the whole approach of the high-tech world is governed by Uranus, and that it's square to Pluto in the sky right now, which implies that it's going to have the power to break it down.
Ah,
break down
Uranus
the old
is
way.
The key. Uranus also has a humanitarian angle to it, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, Aquarius
thinking,
can be a very philanthropic.
It's humanitarian. It really is the planet that has the eye out for the human race as a whole. That goes beyond the ego. So I think what you have with Uranus and Pluto together is a concept of how, well, that's what crowdsourcing is, isn't it? Just the phrase of how people, individuals, all doing their own thing through the age of Aquarius approach to life can actually take a gradual but radical shift from the top-down way of monetizing everything to a literally democratic way of doing it. I mean, this is very abstract, but it's going to have to be abstract at the beginning because we can't imagine what this would look like.
Well, it looks like there'd be a striving towards materialization of this abstractness because our sixth house of labor is in earthy Taurus, and
mm-hmm.
Uranus is in that house.
That's right. Uranus is right there.
Yeah, the Uranus work is going to have to be materialized and made concrete in order
mm-hmm.
to... That's going to be the key to this thing. It seems like that's what the chart is saying.
Well, that would be nice. What we now have, actually, in the tech world, as far as money goes, is a teeny tiny little minority. It's a plutocratic minority, in fact, of, you know, where the wealth has gone. Most tech workers in the country, God knows in the whole world, don't have that kind of money by any means. So what unfortunately I think might have to happen as we begin this transformative process is that at first the solution to the problem, which is going to have to be technology in part, at first it echoes the old style Capricorn dryations, you know, the hierarchy of the old school way before it can, you know, I think that's what we're seeing now, before it can burst free.
Wow, it reminds me of the ancient Chinese, I hate to call it a curse, but that's what everybody calls it. You know, may you have may you live in interesting times.
Boy, these really are interesting times, aren't they?
They certainly are. I know I'm excited about the pending Pluto return. That's going to be an I'm almost a little frightened, to be honest.
Well, you know, I always go back to the fact that, that this is a belief, a faith even, that we were all born now for a reason. Then on the soul level, we did make a decision to be born right now and at no other time. So now we're living it out.
Words to live by. Well, Jessica, we've run out of time. I can't thank you enough for joining us tonight.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And again, run, don't walk, to mothersky.com, and you'll find a lot there to read, research. Pick up her books if you want to explore this topic. Soul Sick Nation goes into it. At the Crossroads goes into it. And again, in the webinar, July 11th, 13th, and 14th, you'll be able to listen to Jessica discuss this Pluto energy more in depth. So, wow, that was really amazing.
Are you there?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Parsing all of this. I think. One second. Well, that was a great interview.
Yes, it was.
I think we do our banter
it was
now, right?
It was, well, you have to say something about things.
Ah, sorry. I'm.
Say goodbye to Jessica. I know you're in awe as a keen astrologer.
Yes, he's stunned.
Of the goddess Jessica Murray, but you need to say goodbye to her, Stephen, before
you're
we move
quite,
on.
I'm still here.
You're quite right.
Just trying to figure out what's happening.
Well, I'll say goodnight too. It was great. Thank you.
Are you
Thank
Brenda?
You. It was really
Hi,
awesome.
Brenda.
Thank you,
that
Jessica.
That was great.
Amazing.
Thank you. It was a great, great interviewer.
Blessed be.
Really fun. Thank you. Where are you located?
Oh, I'm in North Carolina.
You're in
south.
North Carolina, Stephen. Okay. And where's everybody else?
California. Brent, the girls are in California.
Where are you in California?
I live in Coronado area.
Okay.
I'm in Southern California, near Temecula, Riverside County.
Riverside, that's where my family lived. Yeah.
Yeah, Riverside County.
Uh-huh. Gosh, isn't it amazing? And here we are all on the phone.
Yeah, it's like we should be. No mistake there.
It really is a small world. I took a bus to Riverside County once when I was 15. Sort of kind of ran away from home situation. It was fun.
Stephen, how's your mother doing?
Oh, she is absolutely fine, praise God. She got out of the hospital. She was hospitalized for a heart attack. But she's out now. She sounds just like her usual self, and I'm very grateful.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. All right, everybody. Well, I'm so pleased, and I'm so grateful for you for having me on again.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on, Jessica. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I know our listeners did as well.
Wonderful. I hope they did. Okay, everybody. Good night now.
Ciao.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Okay. That was absolutely enlightening. And before we go into the banter, I believe I do need to make some announcements.
Yes, you
right,
do.
Absolutely. So, time for the announcements. So, don't miss the second half of the show, because that's when the free on-air readings are going to happen. With all the gifted psychics that are co-hosting this particular show, you're going to get to call them up and ask them a question. We're going to announce that call-in number for you a little bit later, so be sure to have your pen and paper handy. If you couldn't catch our last week's show on spirit photography, jet on over to the archives, and you'll be able to find it in there. Please circulate those archive links to all your family and friends, because our goal is to get this information out to as many of you as possible. So share that link. Also, visit us at psychicbloggers.com to learn about everything in the paranormal category, from reincarnation to the how-tos, the nuts and bolts of developing your own psychic powers. And if you're interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com, where you'll find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics, each with their own unique gifts. Every psychic on the site has a detailed profile for you to find out more about them and to choose from the list of some of the most authentic and gifted psychics around. It's an honor working with Doug precisely because he has such high standards for his psychics. That just makes everything much, much better, and we really have high expectations over at psychicaccess.com. Now, all of the co-hosts here on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com work at Psychic Access. So if you want a personal reading from any one of us, be sure to visit PsychicAccess.com, and we would love to hear from you. Incidentally, site owners, webmasters, you can earn 50 cents a minute on every reading on traffic that's referred to PsychicAccess.com. For more details, visit PsychicAccess.com/webmasters. If you like our show, invite your friends to join us in the chat room. Listen to the psychic viewpoint. There's something for everyone. So please spread the word. We very much appreciate it. Okay, now I believe we banter. Everyone,
you don't know what you're doing, do you? I'm joking.
He was just so blown away by.
I know. I think
just
he was like
up right now.
He's like smitten in a way.
Yes. He's smitten.
You're smitten. I like that word.
She is great though. The only problem with an interview with Jessica is the time just goes by so quickly because she's so knowledgeable. You could interview her for hours on end. She's a great guest because there's never any shortage of things to ask or talk about, but I'm definitely going to tune into her web conference. That sounds really interesting. She's so up to date with what's going on in the world as well, and I watch a lot of online material, and I read a lot about world affairs, you know, what's actually going on in the world, not the politics of it, but what's really happening in the world and why and what's coming and how we might influence that. And I would love Jessica to have a TV show in which she can actually talk about world events as they're occurring, because I think that she could add more value than Fox and CNN put together.
I'll tell you what, she doesn't, she's pretty much nonpartisan, and she doesn't take any crap either. I mean, in her books, she lays it out like it is. Very eye-opening stuff.
She's so smart as well. I mean, her books are, on the one hand, incredibly insightful, really hard-hitting because they tell you the truth about what's actually going on in the world, real observations about what's happening, and she's hilariously witty. I don't know.
I don't either.
Well, that's interesting that you guys don't know.
I'm guessing that I'm guessing because she has that gorgeous two-tone hair that she must have some sort of mercurial sign on the ascendant. But I'm guessing.
We should find out.
Well, you know, some people with their horoscopes, you know, it's sort of like their social security number. You know what I'm saying? They don't want you peeking around in there.
Wouldn't you think that, I would think that Mercury must be extremely prominent and harmonious in her chart because she's so smart. The Mercury must be strong. And the other thing, I think that Pluto would be very strong because she's amazing at really digging to the truth of what's occurring rather than just the gloss that we see in the media.
I'd expect to see an accentuated third house as well, because she can really write. I mean, those books are cogently written. They're right up there, like with a level of like Dane Rudjar or Stephen Arroyo, someone who is, you know, they have an academic feel to them, but they're not stuffy at all. That's, I mean, it's really entertaining.
But there, Stephen, there aren't many people out there specializing in humanistic astrology. So Jessica is literally looking at the. I know that she does individual consultations and interpretations. I've had one with her and it was great, but she's one of the few people in the world that uses astrology and universal astrology to comment on or provide insight into world events now, in the past, and in the future. So I have a huge amount of admiration for her. She's great.
So she's trailblazing in this field. She's a pioneer.
Yes. Yeah, and she's hilariously funny. I remember when I interviewed her, Stephen, she forgets what she's written because she writes a lot. But I remember she was writing about the banking scandals. So all of these
risks that the big banks took that crashed the economy. And in a book, I think it's the book At the Crossroads, she commented on that and she said, you know, it really brings a whole new feel to the term piggy bank. I just love that. Yeah. She comes out with these classic phrases that are just exquisitely insightful and impactful and hilarious at the same time.
Yeah, you definitely get that sense that, you know, she's sticking it to the man with some of these things we're talking about here. You know, there's a breath of, it's not partisan at all. She's not taking sides from any political spectrum. You know, it's a very honest book, and the astrology in it is sound. I enjoyed it thoroughly. It's one of those books I'm going to go back and reread for sure. I'm curious to know what the ladies thought about the interview. Lady Brenda and Maureen.
Well, you know, when she was talking about the, you know, the natal, you know, America's, the United States chart, and she talked about Aquarius moon.
Right, yes.
That clicked with me. It really did. And it clicked with me because, you know, it can be a very distant and not wanting to deal with things type of thing, too. Like, you know,
yeah.
The whole thing where you put the, you know, wool, you know, sometimes you brush it under the bed, you know what I mean? You don't deal with it. If it's highly emotional, or you might deal with people that are not as close to you,
right,
instead of who your real family is. Aquarians sometimes tend to do that. They have their friends sometimes take precedence over their people. Do you see what
yeah,
I mean?
I do.
Struck me. I mean, it was pretty interesting.
Yes, Aquarius can be kind of cold.
You know, it's kind of a...
You people, you hurt me, but you're so wrong.
It's right, isn't it?
It's right. Well, I wanted to ask you, because my primary sign by far is Aquarius. It's my most powerful, most harmonious sign. So although my son's in Capricorn, I'm ridiculously Aquarian. So being cold is, or being focused upon facts or knowledge or rationale is definitely very Aquarian. And
yeah,
and it means that at times we lack emotion, because I know that I do get accused at times of being emotionally cold and just completely fact-based. Well, this is what occurred, boom, 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 these are the facts, boom, 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 without stopping to see how people feel about it. And I think that that's often what America does in terms of its
bellicose
approach.
Exactly, that's the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, but you're
it's
right.
It's a humanitarian sign, but it doesn't... You know, it's uncomfortable with things that are emotional and or are at home, but more concerned with maybe like trying to figure out or trying to, you know, rationally figure out these problems of the world. Well, when sometimes you just don't get it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it in a negative. It just that struck me. I'm just saying that struck me. I enjoyed what she was saying.
Yeah, and you know, when you bring that up.
Some of it made me uncomfortable because I'm like a crazy, you know, like I love John Wayne and I love Westerns and I love all that Americana. You know, I'm really deeply into that, you know.
That spoke to you, didn't it?
I went, oh my God, all my cowboy heroes.
Yes.
Well, you know, for me, and it kind of blends or fuses a bit with what Brenda was talking about, because, you know, I say Uranus, okay? I say it differently than
that works.
Steve.
That works.
I know,
well,
I like
you're not going to say Uranus?
I was going to say Uranus. I mean,
it's
that stopped when, you know, manic depressive went to bipolar. So I say, you know, these... Uranus.
That's a good one.
It wasn't a good... Anyway, but Stephen does have a unique way of saying Uranus. Uranus is the planet. Is a planet for Aquarius, and she was talking at the very end of the as far as what I remember. Is that correct? Yes, it's a ruling planet for Aquarius. Is that true?
Right.
Yes, I'm correct.
Sure is.
I just want to make sure of that. And it's interesting because she at the very the end of the interview, she was speaking about what's going on in the, you know, where she's talking about Uranus and all the stuff that's happening, the technology things are, and how things are knit for now. And, you know, if you get the Aquarius in there, and Brenda's bringing that up, it's even more amazing because it's almost like there is a feeling that it could be very touchy right now with a breakthrough. We have these breakthroughs and the scientificness of, like, Brenda, what you're saying is in some ways people – you know, the logical way or whatever, but then there's all these technology stuff going on. We could have these revelations or we can mess with ourselves, be rebellious, or there's like a revolution or something happening. And I think that coincides with the 2000, you know, the big doomsday, which wasn't going to happen, but this is our new beginning. We were heading this way from a long time ago, you know, which is a new, this is a new shift for us. Yeah, and the year of Aquarius, really. So, and with
we're
Uranus.
On that. We're not in the age of Aquarius yet. We're still cusping on it.
I think that we were journeying on it. I feel that the big journey was starting around the 60s.
It's very debatable, actually.
Yeah.
But my understanding is that the Aquarian Age began in the late 1800s. I think it was like 1897 or something. But we're still on the cusp because it's such long ages.
Well, you know what's interesting?
I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but I thought that we weren't fully going to be into it until like 2026 or something like that.
It's debatable. That's the thing, Brenda. It's debatable. Different schools of, like in astrology, there are different schools of thought, and different schools of thought have different views on when the Aquarian Age actually began. My teachers taught me that it began in the late 1800s. But that, as I said, it's debatable. It's not a clear-cut answer.
You'd have to go find out.
But either way, we're on. When you think of the length of time involved in the era, we are on the cusp. If it began in the late 1800s, or it begins in 2026, or whenever, we're on the cusp.
Well, that's our destination.
Well, there's lessons with everything that's happening in the world now, really, because we are humanitarians.
And
our whole being is about being a humanitarian country. You know. Our whole being, that's who we are. We, you know, we believe in freedom, we believe in equality and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, where we get this whole, like, for example, this whole thing that happened in Egypt, this was kind of like a reflection, like, hello, you know?
Yes, definitely.
The people and the voice of the people still matters.
That's the lesson that has to be sent to the government.
We should have a Bastille Day, but don't get me started.
I don't do political talk.
I don't want to talk about it that way, but, you know, it's very interesting, all this stuff that's going on, because it feels like it's becoming faster and faster.
The moon is the fastest planet in the heavens, and it's not really very well placed in Aquarius, nor in the third house, because the moon fluctuates, and Aquarius wants to remain fixed. Aquarius is quite... I want to say tenacious, not stubborn, so I'll say tenacious. And so it's not the best placement for the moon. And it sort of shows a reflex to save the world and then to turn your back on the responsibility of following through with it. You see,
exactly.
My moon is in Aquarius. And one of the cons, because everything has pros and cons, but one of the cons of moon in Aquarius is unpredictability, because it's that Uranian electrical energy. So I get accused of being unpredictable emotionally because of that moon in Aquarius.
Yes,
it's very much, it is true.
And it's not like, I mean, you can't help it because it's a planetary force.
Well, you can. You can help it because we're here to evolve beyond our impediments.
True, good point. That's
but it is your autopilot. You know, if you're not being conscious of what you are and what you should be at your best, then it's your default. Yeah. Sure. So I get accused of being changeable. One day I feel like this, and then the next day I feel different. Because the feelings, the emotions just sort of shift very dramatically.
Well, do you mind sharing, like, which house all this is in?
Well, I have a stellium in Aquarius, Moon, Mercury. And you, well, I'd be interested to get your interpretation on it, Stephen. So stellium in Aquarius, Moon, Mercury, and Venus, all right on top of each other in the fifth.
Oh, wow, in the fifth. Oh, man. Wow, are you a gambler?
No, but I should be. I have done some speculation in the past and always done well. I'd like to in the future, but I don't really have the assets to do it with at the moment.
Ah, yes. Okay. Well, actually, I believe that now would be a good time to pass out the call-in number for the free six-minute reading. That number would be 724-444-4851. Again, that number is 724-444-4851. Just give us a call, and we would be delighted to give you a free reading. Okay. Sorry about that. This is one of my favorite topics in the whole world, and you guys are just fascinating me here.
It's fun.
Well, it's stimulating because, you know, we do so much in our work, you know, and astrology is a big part of it. It really is. I mean, I don't think that anybody who does the psychic work is very, oh, let's put it this way, it's very rare that anybody that does the psychic work is not, you know, aware of some of the astrological meanings or how, you know, how it relates to any of our interpretations. It's a part of it.
Yes, it absolutely is. It's so important because it reveals so much of the divine plan, so much of a plan that comes from some entity that's way superior to ourselves somehow.
Well, it's a sacred science, that's for sure. I mean, it is a sacred science because it's part of the whole macrocosm, us being the microcosm.
And just like any profession, like medicine, the law, you know, it's so long-lived that it has it's accumulated authority over the millennia, thousands of years of authority that it's accumulated. And it's really the state of the art has progressed so far in this day and age. It's exciting to use this on a country like America. And you know what? We actually have a caller from Indiana, for Maureen.
Hi, Indiana. This is Maureen. What can I help you with?
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? May I have your name, please?
Conda.
Conda? I hope I said that right. Got it. Hi, Malk. Hi. Nice and happy 4th of July to you. And I'm ready. What's up?
I'm
Conda. I'm sorry, I think I'm losing a little bit. What would you like me to help you with?
Yeah, I was wondering, is there someone special coming into my life soon?
Okay, I wanted to ask you about the question you're asking. Is there anyone on your mind, or are you completely open to anybody? Are you completely, by choice, single right now? Or is there somebody that's around you? You are. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is the thing. I do feel that right now is a very good time to be wanting to ask. Well, it's a very healthy time for you because I do feel that you've done some work big time in the past, and I see you waiting for your ship to come in, but in this case it could be it could be a good partner. And I also feel that you've done some intense work, I call it the work, from past relationships that you're now feeling. It's just a great time because you've done so much work, reflection, and you've released from, you know, feeling like you're tired of waiting. And this is the best thing about this is, I do feel that I don't see a person per se. I mean, usually I'll pick up on a face or a person, but I am feeling that there's somebody around you that you may have felt or recently that you made a wrong choice not to head in the direction of maybe moving forward or kind of letting to see how this relationship would go. And so what I'm feeling is this. If there was somebody that you recently, very recently I would say, met up with, and maybe somebody that you would normally not think would be your type, I feel that you should revisit that because, like I said, you're in a very good place right now, but then I feel that you're it would be somebody that you know of. Do you follow what I'm saying to you?
No, sorry.
What? Yes?
No, I'm a little confused. I'm sorry. but you really don't
okay.
see anyone.
What I'm saying is I feel that there's somebody that you know of already, and you may have made the wrong choice, or you're kind of thinking, you know, I just see you thinking it through, like maybe you made the wrong choice not to go ahead and connect and try this out. And so you're reflecting upon it. And that's why I'm asking you, is there somebody, I feel, it's not like somebody from way long past, but somebody recent that you may have felt, a bond connection to, but kind of decided not to follow through. And I feel that somebody that you know of. And I do see you moving forward, like later on, like I don't like to talk this far in advance, but later on, having a long lifelong partner. I see two kids around you.
Oh, sure.
But there's somebody in your recently that you know. You already know of this person, but I can't see him. Usually I can. So that's why only you would know what I mean by that, somebody that you know of and you're thinking about. That's why I asked you in the beginning, there's someone on your mind.
Well, I do. I broke up with somebody 2 months ago. But I think that's kind of gone.
Do you think it was to your best interest?
Well, it wasn't my choice to break up. So.
Okay, well, this is somebody else, I feel. This is somebody that you know of. It may be a friend that you don't know. It's just somebody that is interested that you may have less. It's okay. The thing is, I would feel, be open to people that you may not think that you'd have a good connection. Be open. I do see you heading in a positive direction. There's somebody around after this relationship you broke up with. There's somebody you've known of through it. May have been friend, or just a friend, but somebody that I feel is very positive.
Oh, very good. Thank you so much, Maureen.
Thank you. I hope I helped you.
Take care. You did. Thank you so much. Uh-huh. Thank
bye-bye.
You. Have a good four.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you very much, Maureen.
Welcome to you.
All right. Thank you very much for that reading. Now, to remind you again, we've got the call-in number is 724-444-4851. And Steve, we got a caller for you from California.
Hello, California. Who's calling?
Hi, this is Sophia. How are you?
I'm great, Sophia. How are you?
I'm fantastic. This is so exciting tonight. This is my first time. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, we're happy to have you here. Did you listen to the interview?
Oh, absolutely. That's what I'm all excited about. It made my 4th of July.
Oh, good, good. Well, it's great to have you with us. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and it's good to have you here for a reading. What's your question?
My question is, tell me about the relationship with Mark and myself and where we're going or not going.
Whether you're going or not going, let me see. You
and where we
Mark.
Are going, I should put it positively.
Sorry, say that again for me, Sophia.
I should say, where are we going?
Where are you going?
In our relationship.
Yeah, well, I feel as though your connection with Mark, Sophia, is a great contrast to the relationship you had before. I know that although you have this really wonderfully uplifting voice, energy, and character, it doesn't really convey the suffering and loss that you've experienced. So I know that your previous relationship was a very sudden and very difficult ending. And for some reason, my guides give me the month of August as a signpost for you with the previous relationship. So maybe you met or it began or ended in August. I'm not sure, but they give me August. But I get the month of February with this current relationship, and I feel as though it's a big contrast. I feel as though there's far more of a spark. There's far more optimism about it. I feel as though the gentleman that you mentioned has had some troubles recently. I feel that he's been under quite a lot of pressure, and also some financial challenges. Not anything dreadful, but I feel he's had to really reorganize and juggle things around. So he's been making changes there. I feel also that he's going to change his direction creatively and professionally, that he's prepared to make the changes he needs to make in order to go forward in life and for you to be part of that. And I feel that he's really determined about his future. I feel that justice will be done. I feel there's a good spiritual connection, and I see the two of you working out well. I don't see concerns, to be quite honest with you. I know that you you have strong feelings for him. My guides say to you, don't be upset or put off by the fact that he's been working through some issues and details in his life. It doesn't mean anything really other than the fact that he needs to get his house in order. And I see good things.
This is fantastic. I mean, this man is a gentleman, I feel. I think he's been very honest with me. Yep. He has a very demanding, stressful job. He's an infusion pharmacist, of course, dealing in chemotherapy drugs. But we were so connected, and now there's a little bit of lapse here, and I'm confused.
But my guide say, always be yourself, always say what's on your mind. He can take it. He's not as outpouring as you emotionally, but he's somebody that can certainly handle you being open and honest about your feelings. I don't feel that there's a distance between the two of you. I just feel that he's sorting some things out, and I feel that he is very fond of you and prepared to make changes in his life. I feel that he'll retire within 3 years anyway. I'm very drawn to the month of February. Not sure if that's when you met or if that's a future signpost for you being together, but it feels good to me. It feels good. And you're a wonderful person to be with. So don't forget that, because my guides say, although you've had a difficult time in the past, you are a wonderful, wonderful partner. And you should always remember that. Okay?
I gather you see us being partnered together, I hope, on a long-term basis.
I do. And I feel that you'll probably move in together at some stage. It would be in the month of February, not necessarily next February, but whichever year it is, it's the month of February. But I feel you've got a nice relationship. He's a spiritual man as well. He's got strong spiritual or religious beliefs and a respect for spirit and God. And I feel that there's a good future for you. So relax and enjoy. My guides always say, enjoy. Because being in joy, being in harmony, is very positive. It creates life in a relationship or in a career or in anything. Harmony is life. I read a lot by C.C. Zane, and C.C. Zane said, harmony is life, discord is death. On any plane of existence. And it's true of a friendship or of a job or anything. If we allow discord, then we're killing it on some level. So be in joy, enjoy, and bring harmony to yourself and him. And I feel that it's good, Sophia. I really do feel good about it.
That's funny. Well, I'm thrilled because, yes, I feel spiritually connected to him as I think he does me. May I ask, you're on Psychic Access. It's Steve, correct?
Yes, I am. And there's actually, I was going to say to you, Sophia, a great way to understand relationship dynamics is to compare the natal charts. And I can do that for you if you come to me at Psychic Access. But my colleague Stephen, who is with a PH, who did the interview with Jessica, he's also a hermetic astrologer, and he can compare the relationship dynamics for you. So come and see either of us, and we'll look at that for
you. That would be great. Okay, so it's Steve, not Stephen, on PA, correct?
I'm Steve, but Stephen can help you in just the same way. He's also a hermetic astrologer, so yeah, either of us would be delighted to help you.
You do the natal charts as well.
We can do, yeah. Yeah, and there are lots of wonderful people on Psychic Access. Everybody's good. I hire them, and we don't hire anybody that is substandard. We only hire wonderful people, and part of our policy, Sophia, is we hire people that really care. You know, somebody could apply and be very psychic, but if they're not really caring and loving and spiritual, we don't want them. So we hire great psychic ability and really good people that care. So any of us can help you, okay?
That's wonderful. Thank you so very much. It's been such a pleasure.
You're welcome, Sophia. We're here every week, so join us again.
Okay, you got it.
Steve, thank you very much for that stellar reading. Your wise guides have certainly helped Sophia. Thank you. Okay, well, Brenda, we have a caller from Montreal.
Hi, Montreal. How can I help you this evening?
Hi. I'm wondering if you've seen me moving, and if so, when?
Speak up again. I'm sorry.
I'm wondering if you see me moving.
Okay. Let's take a peek. Let's take a little peek here. In order for you to move, there has to be something that happens first. And it looks like it's a little bit of a sacrifice for you, and it could even involve a sacrifice of money. when I'm looking at it, it looks like, you know, this is getting ready to evolve towards the end of this month as well. I'm seeing that plans for moving in the past didn't work out because it wasn't the right timing. But it looks like I see the window of opportunity by the end of this month to put forth some plans to make this move. Are you applying for another job?
I was looking for that, but I really have been having a tough time with both situations. So,
with what situation?
Well, with work and finding a new place that accepts dogs and pets. So it's been really difficult.
Well, it's interesting because it's about 30 days out, and I do see that a new opportunity financially is before you. And it looks like a man, he's a little bit of an older man, gives you a chance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're approaching this for the right reasons. This
okay,
new place that you find to leave... You're thinking about, you know, well, if you have to move, would you have to leave your animals? I'm not seeing that. I'm really not. If you be a little patient and you keep focusing on what you want throughout this whole thing, because there's two things happening. You need to make a move. You need to get the money that you need for that. You need your job to pay you a little more. If you keep focusing on one thing at a time, like the job first, the money thing, the rest I feel is going to evolve for you. But I do believe that you're going to be able to take your pets too. I do see that.
Okay. And do you know when you see the move? Is it at the end of this month or?
It looks like it's towards the end of July. I see it about 30 days out, and it feels like there is some. You're going to get help from people that you know. I see a man, an older man, that's going to be offering you another opportunity work-wise in which you can make a little bit of money.
Is it at my existing job?
Pardon me?
Is it at my existing job that I'm at now? Because I've been looking for a second job as well.
No, it's a different job. It's another place.
Okay.
And I know it's always... You know, this could even be a temporary situation that turns into a permanent situation. And, you know, because you need the money, the certain amount of money to make your move, and that will bring it to you. So it's about focusing on it. It's going to happen for you. And I see it within 30 days.
Okay. Is there anything that you see stopping me aside from money from moving?
The only thing that I see besides that, because what's come up also has to do with somebody who is in your life that has a negative influence around you, like could even say something like, oh, well, you can't make this move. Nobody's going to take you with your dogs, or I don't know if you're going to be able to do this. You know, that's something that you have to consciously, and it could even be a relationship from the past and somebody who's kind of, you know, trying to pull you back or...
Okay.
Not wanting you to move forward.
Okay.
Are you leaving somebody right now? Are you leaving a man in the past?
No, I haven't been in a relationship for a little while.
And it feels like there's a man with negative influence around him. And I'm seeing that this is mostly talk. So, you know, you just have to be strong and you know what you need to do, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Brenda, thank you so much for that reading. That was excellent. Okay, just to repeat, the call-in number is 724-444-4851. We take the calls in the order they're received, so please, let's restrict them to one question only for time restraints. Now, I believe I do have a caller from Ohio. Are you there, Ohio?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Well, how may I help you this evening?
I was wondering about my oldest daughter, if when I would get custody back.
You want to know if you'll get custody back of your eldest daughter?
Of my oldest daughter, and when.
Okay, you want to know if you'll get custody back, right?
Yes.
Okay, will she get custody back? One second. How long have you two been apart?
Then, basically, she was 6 weeks old.
Oh, my goodness. How old is the child now?
She'll be four in October.
Oh, that's awful. That's a very long time. Will you get custody back? One second. Yes, this is a situation that has a lot of self-sacrifice in it for you. Let's see what we have here.
I've sacrificed a lot. That is
well,
true.
Your sacrifice will pay off. That's the good news here. I see that after a struggle, you will get custody of your daughter. Absolutely. And I have reason to believe that this will be either in the winter or the spring of 2014. Those two seasons are leaping out to me right here. Jupiter, energy of good fortune, smiling upon you, but he's not going to let you get off without a struggle. You will have to struggle, but you'll get custody of that. I'm positive. In fact, there's a card here that's a signature that's a stands for your daughter. It's a jack of scepters, and it's upside down, so that represents a young female too, and it tells me that she's gonna feel like a fire sign, like a Sagittarius. She's gonna feel exuberant about being reunited with you as well. The four of scepters tells of a reunion of the home, so this is going to happen for you.
Good, because I'm really highly attached to my children. I have my youngest one taken, but I only said one question, and she's taken by the same person. So, you know, I'm just worried about her also.
Oh, yeah, I can tell. You've been moody. You've definitely been moody in the days and weeks leading up to this very moment right now. But it seems as if the period of time that we're in now is also the arena for the greatest struggle as well. So it looks as if you'll have to be battening down the hatches for that struggle coming up shortly if you're not already in it. So,
how bad is the struggle coming up?
Right. Well, are you talking about a specific court date or something of that nature?
Right now I'm just fighting two court battles with both of my girls. They're in two different courts, but how bad is the time coming up with my daughter?
The time, before you get custody? Were you talking about like a visitation arrangement?
No, the visitation arrangement is pretty bad right now, but it's kind of working out, but the struggle that the cards are talking about.
Oh, well, that struggle, for one thing, I should also tell you that the card representing struggle also represents an escape from danger as well. So that's one of the factors leading me to think there's going to be a positive outcome for you. You're going to escape from danger. The suit of this card deals with lawsuits and court cases and legal issues, but you're going to come out on top. And I see you reuniting with your daughter in the future, and I see it being very enthusiastic, very positive. So I see also in the past where you were moody and depressed about this, and you know that's going to be corrected in the future.
Can you tell me when I would be reunited with my youngest daughter?
Again, I'm thinking winter time of 2013 or springtime of 2014. Possibly at the latest, it would take a year at the very latest, but probably winterish, springtime, is something like that. Do you have a lawyer in questions such as these? It's always important to have the best legal advice, or the best legal representation you can have. So
I have two attorneys, and I'm hoping, I know one's working for me. I just have a court-appointed attorney for my youngest daughter, and I've had three attorneys before, and I'm hoping he will do the best, like he says, to get my youngest daughter home. But sometimes I have my doubt about him.
Yes, ma'am. Well, you're going to get your wish on this matter. You're going to win custody of your child, and there'll be a reunion coming up for you in the short-term future, okay?
Okay.
Well, I appreciate you calling in tonight, and I hope you'll come visit us at psychicaccess.com.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I hope you have a good night as well. Happy 4th of July. Okay. Well, Maureen, we have a caller from you for you from New York, but before we get to that, I just want to say call us in at 724-444-4851 with your question. We'll be happy to help you. Now, Maureen, we do have a caller from New York.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I have a problem. Can you hear me okay, everybody? Okay. Hi, New York. This is Maureen.
Hi, Maureen. How are you?
Fine. How are you? And who am I speaking to?
This is Christina.
Hi, Christina. And what can I help you with?
I basically would like to know, I'm in a relationship with a guy named Sammy for the past year. We just celebrated our 1 year anniversary. We came back from a beautiful trip together in Aruba. But I'm basically ready to settle down, and I have doubts that he's not. Now, I'm not sure if I'm correct, or because I talked to him about it a little bit here and there, but it never came up like a deep, deep discussion. So I was wondering, is this the man? Do you see us settling down commitment? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I love, you know, I love what you say. You and boy, Aruba, did you say Aruba? You went to, that's fantastic.
You was in Aruba, yes.
Aruba. That's fantastic. You know, this is the thing. What I'm seeing is here, it looks like January, February. It looks like there was some issues going on between you two that it looked like there was some issues and indecisiveness about where it was leading. So you made it to the year, and that is a real prominent time for any relationship. 6 months, a year, the year and a half is either you decide to stay or you decide to not stay together, because like you said, you want to see it take a serious step forward. I absolutely see that. Definitely you're moving towards that. You're on the same page. I feel that if he has a hard time communicating, or you know, like a lot of I know
his lifestyle,
guys,
makes me think, because he has a bunch of friends and they're partying. Going out all the time, and he's in the mix of that, and we get along perfect, but just because his lifestyle makes me think that he's not the settling type guy.
Right.
And he doesn't express that to me.
But, you know, so he's guilty by association because he's hanging out with the friends that are all over the place.
And that's his life.
Right?
Yes, that's like his big thing.
And, you know, in one way, you know, I'm very objective, and I take pride in that with my readings, because if you tell me that, I could easily say, oh, yeah, that guy's not – he's. I don't feel that about him. I feel that he's doing it, and he's doing his thing. I don't feel I feel he's getting more bored. And time goes on. Look, he went on a nice trip with you to celebrate your anniversary. And not only that, I do see in springtime, and I see early part of spring 2014, definitely there is this has a lot to do with, like, if you want to get married, okay, yes, ceremonial. I do see that, absolutely. It looks like in the late April.
Okay.
So it's you know, it's, well, I guess it would be the middle of spring, I guess. I see late April. I do see definitely you two together, and I see you both transcending, what's the word? It will transcend into a marriage situation. Definitely it's all about emotional overflowing. It's wonderful, and it's a new beginning, and there's a big change. I don't see it to be somebody else that you see or meet. It's him. But I do see that you're losing faith. I mean, and when you start feeling like you're going to lose faith about this, pick yourself back up and notice by his actions whether I don't feel he'll be doing that as much. It's going to become less and less more important for him. And sometimes you just got to really be still sometimes and see it. Even if it's a little tiny, I know, little tiny progress, not as fast as you would like, but still there's I see little progress. You know, it looks like it's real important for him. It looks like he's a very secure, successful financially. I mean, he looks like he'd be good marriage material. Yeah, I do see a change of residence coming up in something also in the months, late months of summer on fall, and a home of some sort, new home. But is he a financially secure man?
He is a carpenter. He has a good job, and
they're very successful. Definitely.
He never mentions anything about it, and I don't want to be the one always mentioning it because it sounds like I'm nagging. So I'm losing patience, and I'm becoming more distant, you know, my mood, you know.
I got it, because he's not communicating. That's what the difference is. And men out there, I'm sorry I'm going to say this, men have a hard time, males, boys, whatever, have a hard time sometimes expressing. That's why I say look at his actions. And I feel that what I'm seeing is within the next month into 2 months, I do see that he's going to be less and less wanting to go out with his pals. And even though you're wanting the words from him, you may not be getting it, but watch him making an effort. And I suggest, or I'm encouraging you, to bring it up in a nice way, not rude, or not to where you're giving an ultimatum, but in a way saying, I'd really like to see you not hanging around partying so much with your guy friend. And just say kind of whatever sense of humor, it may be easy for you, right? And I honestly feel that he will... It'll be less and less more important for him to go out and about having a fun time like he's a player. I don't see him to be a player, though. But like, he is guilty by association because he is going out. I get it. Yeah. But I feel that he's on the same page as you. He just does not – he doesn't communicate properly. And he won't, because he's hanging out. We're colored by our environment. But I do feel that you'll see it. Less and less he'll be interested. It may come – suddenly you're like, why aren't you out with your – you'll be shocked. Why aren't you out with your friends? I don't know. I just don't feel like it. That's what I'm talking about. Pay attention to that, because it will really help you, because I don't want you to start losing faith and hope in this. I see this to be a very positive relationship, definitely. Okay? And moving forward. I really do. Really.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Christina.
It.
And you take care, and not to worry, and be self-aware, okay? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you very much for that reading, Maureen.
Sure.
Steve, we have a caller for you from Ohio.
Good evening. Who's calling from Hawaii? Ohio.
Hi.
Hi. What's your name?
My name's Joe.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you tonight?
I'm good, Joe. Doing well. Thank you. I enjoyed the interview. How can I help, Joe?
Yeah, my question is, my girlfriend is 4 months pregnant. Can you tell me what we will be having, boy or girl?
Whether it's a boy or a girl, I'm more drawn to it being a boy than a girl, to be honest with you. But I always go back to the point, as long as the baby is healthy and happy, does it matter? But I'm more drawn to it being a boy, in honesty. And the cards say boy as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Joe. Well, good luck to you. Sounds like a good time. Wonderful time to start a family. So good luck.
Thank you.
Wow, that was a very powerful reading, Steve. Thank you very much for that. Sometimes the guides give the information instantly, and they're short and sweet.
Yeah, I think I like that, Stephen, just to go straight away with what my guides make me feel. Before you think, you know?
Ah, I see.
Just going purely with your intuition and that immediate connection with spirit rather than stopping to reflect upon it, because I think that's when the human mind gets involved.
Yeah, and it gums up the process, I suppose. Yeah.
It usually does, yeah.
Very, very interesting. I have a lot to learn in the area of mediumship and use of the intuition. It's such a fascinating topic. Now, I want to remind you as well that tonight's free reading can be continued. If you go to psychicaccess.com and are a first-time register, then you get a free 6-minute reading. And we definitely invite everybody listening to visit us at psychicaccess.com, where we have pages upon pages upon pages of authentic, gifted psychics with detailed profiles and reviews. So we help you make an informed decision at psychicaccess.com. So definitely come check us out. So, Steve, you say you enjoyed the interview. I'm so glad. That's very gratifying to me. I had you at heart when I did a lot of this.
Yeah, I'm a big astrology fan, and I've got a huge amount of respect and time for Jessica. Because yes. I believe that she... I believe very much in us using our insight and using metaphysical tools to help individuals. It's really a very powerful way to help a person understand who they are, their most fruitful path in the world, and helping them to see what's likely to occur if they function just on autopilot in life, but how they can influence and change the energies coming in the future. But I really like Jessica's work, and I love humanistic astrology because I think it's incredibly powerful to look at dynamics in the world or dynamics in a nation, between nations, and really look at how we can unravel all of those dynamics and create big change in the world. And that's the kind of work that I feel Jessica's doing.
Yes, you definitely were interested in the larger implications for the question, the global implications, which I thought was nice. But I do believe that we have a question from the chat room. From their mommy, apparently. She wants to know if things will work out with the baby daddy that she's pregnant with this kid right now.
Okay, I'll take that one. I'll take it. Let's see. Let's see what's going on. Very important question. Right now, what I see is that the baby daddy, he's not dealing with reality. He's not fully engaged, almost like he can't. You know, he's not believing or putting a lot of belief in the birth of the baby or the reality that comes from it. I feel that once the baby's born, that he will come around because all of a sudden it's happened and it's really happening, because right now I feel that he's got his head in the sand a little bit. He's still being kind of immature. He's got a lot of other things around him, even some distractions. This is a thing of patience. This looks like it was something that happened and he wasn't fully prepared for it. He's trying to figure out, you know, how he's going to, you know, survive financially himself. And so he's put a lot of this on him. However, when he does see the child, I do feel that this could be a moment of truth for the two of you. And I see that even though it's difficult right now and he's not being very supportive of this step and what's happening with you, it's kind of a journey between the two of you. And, it will get better. The most important thing to remember now is that some of the words that he says, you know, he might not really mean them if they're angry ones. So be aware that this is a highly emotional time for both of you. And at the end of it, once the baby's born, I feel that there's going to be kind of a very sweet reunion between the two of you. That's what I see. So there you go.
There you have it.
All right.
Well, I was going to say that. But I didn't want to, like, hijack Maureen's little, like, thing.
My thing.
There it is. So there you have it.
Absolutely. It was a wonderful reading. Well, that brings us to the end of another wonderful show. I'd like to thank Doug, who works behind the scenes as our executive producer and keeps us all on track. I'd like to thank my co-hosts tonight, Lady Brenda, Steve, and Maureen.
And what's her name?
your show next week.
Yes, it is. What are we looking forward to? I feel you all really enjoy this. It's called Redefining Yourself, and the guest I have for the book for this is Alan. Well, he came to me actually, great guy, Alan Vosberg, and he will be talking about how he was a very successful, you know, entrepreneur for a large IT consulting company, and living American dream. You know, we've heard this is kind of like the change that we've all seen now, and with all the money and everything. And then there was something missing, so he is now in this. You know, Steve here did something like this. So being caught up in life, so he wrote a book, and it's about recalibrating your life. So it's about, you know, being caught up in the old way of life and having new possibilities as a gift, I feel. And so the journey one takes to find their true authentic self, what their life purpose is, and make their life by that. So it'll be very good. It'll be very good. And everybody, I feel, will identify with this much. So that's it.
Definitely want to have the notepad and the pencil and the Java handy.
If that so be it, you will. Steven, it was a great interview. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Happy 4th of July.
Definitely. Happy Independence Day to everybody. Yeah, I hope you guys enjoy the cookouts or whatnot, which are probably over by now, but fireworks.
Well, I'm going to start mine soon.
Yeah, me too. We're in California, yay.
Oh. That's right, 3 hours reprieve. Lucky. Lucky, lucky. Well, yes.
Does Steve have something to say?
Steve? He's still reeling from the night show, too. Good night, everyone.
Well, thank you, everyone, for coming to the chat room. We really enjoyed everybody. There's a lot of new people in there tonight. We really appreciate it because there's so many great people, and I feel there is. I know that you guys will agree with me. It's a really warm, welcoming chat room. So thank you, everybody. Come back again.
Thank you. Good night.
Hello. My name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.